normally when you eat something that tastes different for the first time, you release dopamine, but after a while, that dopamine release attenuates. In our modern food environment, it's very different. When we eat things with added sugar, our brain is releasing dopamine every single time we eat those things. We also have different forms of sweeteners that are available. And while that can be tempting for many individuals because they think, oh, well, I can still enjoy my sweets but not have all of these negative effects of the calories, it's not actually the case. What we're finding from the research is that those other types of sweeteners can still affect the brain in a way that's going to promote craving for sugar, promote overeating, and can also contribute to these health conditions. So it does get confusing when trying to identify, which sugars are, quote unquote, good versus bad. I think.
Hi, and welcome to my podcast. Here, I want to empower you to live your best life by prioritizing your well-being, self-care, and health. I'm Inka Lund, and happy to be on this journey with you. In these episodes, we'll dive deep into health, exploring the latest research, expert insights, and practical tips to help you unlock your full well-being potential. We'll debunk common health myths, answer your burning questions, and address the challenges that often arise on our path to optimal health. Whether you want to improve your well-being, feel better, or cultivate a balanced lifestyle, we got you covered. No matter where you are in your journey, this podcast is a judgment-free zone, providing you with the support and inspiration you need for positive changes. So, this is my personal invitation to you to prioritize your well-being and self-care. Keep updated on new episodes by subscribing on Spotify, Apple, and my YouTube, and follow my Instagram. Enjoy today's episode. Dr. Nicole Avena, research neuroscientist and a pioneer expert and educator in the field of food addiction. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Of course, Dr. Avena, I think we need your expertise now more than ever. So we know that sugar contributes to metabolic disease, spikes insulin, causes sleep issues, obesity, diabetes, and is linked to dementia and aging. But now we also know that it has a significant impact on brain and eating behaviors. And this is something that you have been researching a lot and you have dedicated a lot of time to understanding. So I'm super, super excited to pick your brain about this topic because I think everything has gotten a little bit confusing to say the least. Like sugar and high fructose corn syrup are added to food products that definitely don't require them. We have different forms of sugar. We have artificial sweeteners. We have non-nutritive sugars and different recommendations for what is safe and what's not. So today I'd like to cover this sea of confusion about sugar, processed foods, artificial sweeteners, and how they can become an addiction and what are the consequences and how we can manage sugar intake. So let's start clarifying some terms. What is the difference between dietary sugar and blood sugar, and what kinds of sugar do we have in foods?
Well, it's a really important question, and I think that's part of the reason why we have so much confusion is because there isn't a clear definition out there among the general public regarding what sugars are. And so when we talk about sugar in the sense that you were just describing, where too much of it can be bad for people's health, it can contribute to all of these different health conditions, which are going to reduce not only our longevity, but also are going to promote just a sense of what not being well and not being able to live as healthy as one wants to with all these comorbid conditions that can arise. The types of sugars that we're talking about in those cases are added sugars. And so these are sugars that are added to the food products that we consume, or we're adding sugar to things that we're preparing in the home. And that's very different than sugars that naturally occur in many different types of foods. And so, for example, fruits contain sugar naturally, and those types of sugars are not inherently bad for us because they are actually put into the product naturally, and they are also in balance with other things like fiber and other nutrients that are important for our health. Now, when we talk about other types of sweeteners, then it even gets more confusing because in addition to the sugars that we have, we also have different forms of sweeteners that are available and that are often being used, especially by food companies, to sweeten different products. And these types of sweeteners can range from, you know, ones that have calories to others that are non-nutritive and don't contain any calories. And they still are allowing someone, though, to enjoy sweetness, but perhaps without those extra calories. And well, that can be tempting for many individuals because they think, oh, well, I can still enjoy my sweets, but not have all of these negative effects of the calories. It's not actually the case. What we're finding from the research is that those other types of sweeteners can still affect the brain in a way that's going to promote craving for sugar, promote overeating, and can also contribute to these health conditions. So it does get confusing when trying to identify, you know, which sugars are, you know, quote unquote, good versus bad. I think that the conversation really just needs to be about understanding the different forms of sweetness in our diet and trying to really reduce it.
Yeah. Okay. So you said that what do the sweet flavors do in our brain? Like, that's very relevant. And so what happens in the body and in the brain when we eat sugar? Like, walk us through what happens to me when I eat a piece of chocolate.
So normally when somebody eats something that's sweet, it activates our brain in a way that is going to cause sense of reward and pleasure. And this is normal and natural, and we would expect this to happen because, you know, we're born and we've evolved to actually prefer the taste of sweet. If you think about our hunter and gatherer ancestors, you know, we used to have to roam around the forest searching for a berry bush or finding something to eat. And when we did stumble upon that berry bush, the berries that are sweet are the ones that are safe to eat. The ones that are sour are the ones that have fallen to the floor and are rotting. And those are the ones that we want to avoid. And so we have this innate inborn preference for things that are sweet. Typically in nature, things that are sweet are safe. Same with babies. When babies are born, the very first thing that they usually have is breast milk, and that tastes sweet. And so babies are drawn to that. So we have this pleasure and this derived desire to have things that are sweet based off of just evolution. And what happens in the brain is that in our modern food environment, it's very different. So normally when you eat something that's sweet, it will cause your brain to release neurochemicals like dopamine. It'll also release endogenous opioids, which are binding to receptors in our brain that are going to provide us with feelings of pleasure and reward and reinforcement. And if you're used to eating chocolate and you've had it a couple of times, normally, you know, that dopamine release isn't going to happen all the time, right? If it's a novel food, something that you've never had before, then you know, you're going to be aware and your brain's going to release dopamine in response to tasting something new. That's partially because our appetite system has been developed such that we're very particular about new flavors, new tastes. We have something called neophobia. And you can see this really readily among young kids. They don't really like to try new things all the time. If, you know, you buy a different brand of something and it's a different color slightly, kids are really wary of that. That's actually a good thing because we have to be wary of strange looking foods and different tastes because, you know, we've been programmed to be concerned about the fact that we could be poisoned by the things that we put in our bodies if we're not careful. And so normally when you eat something that tastes different for the first time, you release dopamine, but after a while, that dopamine release attenuates and you don't release dopamine in response to, you know, eating the things that we eat every day. Now, the problem is that in our modern food environment, when we eat things with added sugar, our brain is releasing dopamine every single time we eat those things. Mm-hmm. And this is very different than what is supposed to happen with food. Normally, that dopamine release is, you know, just due to novelty, whereas now the dopamine release that we're seeing in response to eating these high sugar, highly processed foods, that's like what happens when someone uses drugs. So one of the hallmarks of drug use is the repeated release of dopamine in reward-related brain regions like prefrontal cortex, also nucleus accumbens. And that's what we've seen in our research studies. When rats, and there's been studies that have been done with humans, are eating sugar in an exaggerated way, like most of us are, it's causing the brain to react in a way that's like they're using a drug. And that's what contributes to wanting more. That's what contributes to feelings of withdrawal when we don't have it. And that's what contributes to the craving. And really, I think that's what the underlying reason is behind the obesity epidemic and why we're finding it so difficult to control our appetites and make food choices that we know are going to be healthier.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's very fascinating. So you said that, you know, our brain should adapt when we eat certain foods. And that's how, like, evolutionarily, that's gone, that we eat foods and then our brain adapts and the dopamine is not released that much anymore. But nowadays we do. So did our brain change or did the food change? Or what happened? Why are we having so much dopaminergic stimulation from food these days?
Well, our brains certainly haven't changed, or at least if they have changed, they're not able to change as rapidly as our food environment has. And so certainly the food environment has changed dramatically. And I mean, if you take a look at even over the past 20 years, we've seen this happen where there is an influx of products in the grocery stores that are just highly processed foods. The majority of the foods in the grocery store are processed foods. And these are foods that are man-made. They are concocted in food laboratories. They're developed to taste a certain way. They're developed to contain a bunch of ingredients so that they'll look and smell a certain way. And a lot of times those ingredients have nothing to do with the nutritional value of the food. They're simply just added so that the food is hedonically appealing, meaning that it smells nice. When you open up the wrapper, it's going to, you know, have an aroma that's going to be pleasurable. When, you know, you place it in your mouth, it's going to slightly melt a little bit and have a nice mouth feel to it. These are all things that are done in designing these highly processed foods to make us enjoy them. And again, this, in a perfect world, it would be a great thing that we get to enjoy these delicious foods. But in the real world, while we're enjoying them, our brain is being hijacked by them. And it's leading into this pattern of eating. And it's starting very young. We're seeing this happening with little kids where we get dependent on sugar. And when people try to make changes, and, you know, we see this often if somebody says, oh, I'm going to go on a diet and cut out all the added sugar, it can be extremely difficult. And often people fail when they try to do that or even try to minimize the sugar. And so it's really a challenge for our society, because what we're seeing is that our food environment has evolved rapidly and our brains have not. We still have those hunter-gatherer brains. And we think that when we stumble upon a candy bar, you know, it's like finding that berry bush, but it's not. We see the candy bars are everywhere now.
Yeah. Okay. So these are like the riskiest foods are those with added sugars and things like high fructose corn syrup, which
yes,
is added to even children's foods these days.
Yes. I would say that when we take a look at the foods that most people are eating, especially young kids, you'll see that there is sugar added. And it's difficult because sugar has many different names. So it's not going to necessarily say on the ingredients list sugar. It could say, like you said, high fructose corn syrup, which is a type of sweetener. It also could say fruit juice concentrate, which okay, to somebody might sound, well, that sounds healthy. Fruit juice, you know, but that's sugar. That's essentially fruit that's been boiled down to just the sugar that's in the fruit. Everything else has been discarded, and you're essentially just using the sugar in the fruit without the fiber and other nutrients to sweeten a product. Even things like agave nectar, which sound healthy because it sounds like a plant, right? Again, same thing. It's boiled down into, you know, the sugar essentially, and that's what's used to sweeten the product. So you have to be very careful and aware of all the different names that are out there for added sugar. Products don't simply just say that this contains added sugar. In the United States, we have a on our nutrition facts label. Over the past couple of years, it's become a requirement that companies disclose how much added sugar is in a product. And so they have to list the amount of added sugar in grams and then also provide a percentage of the daily recommended value of added sugar. And so we do have a little bit more clarity, but the sneaky reality is that many of the food companies didn't want to have to say that the food product contains 300% of your daily recommended value of added sugar. And so what they've done is to put some of these other sweeteners in the product along with added sugar. And so those other sweeteners like monk fruit, stevia, they don't quote unquote count as a sugar, but they certainly do make the product sweet. And so I think that in many ways, we're worse off than we were 5 years ago when that wasn't a requirement by, you know, our federal government, because now it's not just that we have products with added sugar. Now we have products with added sugar and all these other sweeteners on top of it. So it's just making our diets more and more sweet and making us more and more dependent on the sweetness that we're expecting from food.
Okay, did I got it right? So basically the added sugars there, the actual sugars are there to make us addicted or, you know, can potentially cause addiction, whereas certain sweeteners like stevia and monk fruit are there to bring the flavor. So we would attach the sweet flavor to the, yeah, the behavior, and that can make us even more addicted to the
Yeah, food. People will often ask, you know, if things like stevia, monk fruit, are they also addictive? And my answer is, it's the sweet taste that's addictive. And so when we try to just simply, you know, swap out sugar and swap in one of these alternative sweeteners, that's not really going to work, because we've shown in our research studies that just the taste of sweet on the tongue is sufficient to release dopamine in the brain. And so it's really more about, you know, the effect that we have when we ingest sugar. When you ingest something sweet like sugar, or even if you ingest monk fruit or stevia or one of these other products, it's activating the brain reward system regardless of what type of sweetener you're using. Now, I'm not saying that we should forget about these other types of sweeteners. I do think that they do have some value. I think that especially people who are trying to reduce added sugar in their diet, if they could use some of these non-caloric sweeteners as a crutch to help them, you know, get all the sugar out of their diet, that's great. But I don't think that should be the end goal. I think that the end goal should really be to reduce the amount of sweetness that people have in their diet. If you think about beverages, for example, you know, many people drink sugar-sweetened beverages throughout the day, or if they have coffee, they have it flavored with different sweeteners. And I think that, for example, let's just say somebody's, you know, trying to get themselves off of, you know, having to add so much sugar to their coffee in the morning. I think maybe stevia drops or monk fruit in that case could be useful. But eventually, my advice to that person would be, let's try to use less and less and less of it until the point where maybe you don't have to have added sweetness in your coffee. I think that's really the problem that we're finding ourselves in, is that when you look at a diet of an individual throughout the day, you could see that there's so many points in which sweetness has been injected, right? It's not just like, you know, you have some sweet fruit maybe with breakfast, or you have, you know, dessert in the evening. What we see now is that throughout the entire day, it's just one thing with sugar and sweeteners in it after another. It starts off with that morning coffee with the sweetened creamer. And then, you know, we go on to the pancakes with maple syrup, which has sugar in it. Syrup is another word for sugar. And then, you know, lunch, and then frappuccinos, all these like beverages that people have throughout the day. It's just this ongoing consumption of sugar, and that's really affecting our brain and causing us to crave it.
Wow. Okay. So I definitely want to know more about how we can control sugar cravings, how we can reduce the amount of sugar that we have in the diet. But yet, to clarify some of the sugars, natural sugars and added sugars, is like, what is brain reacting similarly to, let's say, a piece of fruit than the piece of chocolate? Let's say, does the fructose in the fruit cause the same surge of dopamine and the same dependency, or is it totally different?
It's different when we talk about fruit. So if you think about fruit, right, you have fructose and fruit, but you also have fiber and you also have other nutrients. And you also have an amount of fructose that is much, much less concentrated than the amount of fructose that would be in high fructose corn syrup that would be added to, let's say apple juice. And so when we're looking at the effect of eating fruit on the brain, we're going to see that it's going to be much less in terms of releasing dopamine and a rewarding response than if somebody were to be drinking fruit juice, for example, that's sweetened with something like high fructose corn syrup or sucrose or even any of these other types of sweeteners that we've been talking about. So I think it's really about, looking at things like I tend to look at things like fruit as a perfect example of if you are craving sugar, go for fruit because it's packaged in a way that's going to give you a healthy dose of sugar, a healthy dose of sweetness. It's an appropriate amount of sweetness because nature created it. Whereas, we've become accustomed, unfortunately, to preferring much higher concentrations of sugar because we're eating all these sugar sweetened cereals. We're having, all of these granola bars and breakfast bars and all of these processed foods that have so much added sugar that our threshold for what's considered sweet has actually become pretty high. And so that's why when people who I work with who are trying to, change their diet, and I suggest that they maybe, have fruit, they kind of laugh at me and say, well, it doesn't taste sweet. And that's because to them it doesn't, because our palates and our brains are so used to this excess sugar from all these other foods. But when you start to reduce the amount of added sugar in your diet and you make changes, you'll be amazed to see how, and I've had so many people tell me this, how suddenly strawberries taste sweet and they had never had that experience in their life. And same with other types of fruits. It suddenly tastes sweet. And that's because it's not being compared in a head-to-head, match against all of these processed foods. And so when your brain can actually enjoy the sweetness that it gets from fruit without expecting sweetness that it's getting from all these added foods, it really can be something that people experience and, can get pleasure from.
Yeah, that makes a total sense for me. So you kind of set your hedonic set point or your set point of sweetness to a different level, which aids you to get more pleasure from fruits, for example. Do they have different effects of our satiety systems in the brain as well?
Do fruits have a different effect on our satiety system? Is that what you're
Yeah,
asking?
fruits versus added sugar.
Absolutely. So, if you eat fruit versus drink fruit juice, you're going to find that you're going to be much more satiated because you are consuming something in the fruit that contains fiber, and the fiber adds to our feelings of satiety. When we eat things that contain fiber, it causes, us to have a sensation that we're going to feel full sooner. And if you think about this, if, I challenged you to eat, let's say, 5 apples, you could sit down and you'd sit there and eat them, and it would probably take you a while, and you'd probably need to take a couple breaks because 5 apples is kind of a lot. But if I were to tell you, let's take 5 apples and juice them and just use the juice, you'd be able to drink 5 apples worth of juice probably in a few minutes. And so that's the big difference. When we look at juice versus actual fruit, we're not getting the fiber that we would get from whole fruit. So I suggest that when, people are focusing on fruit, if you are in a rush, try to put it in a smoothie, but make sure that you're using the whole fruit. Don't use the juice because the juice is essentially just the sugar and it's going to provide you with less nutrition, and also the juice is going to not cause you to feel full. You'd feel really full if you ate 5 apples, but if you drank a can of apple juice or a glass of apple juice from 5 apples, you probably wouldn't feel full. And so focusing on the whole fruit is the way to improve satiety.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. So what are the signs and symptoms of sugar addiction? How do you know if you just enjoy sweet tastes every now and then, or are you actually addicted to sugar?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think identifying whether or not you're addicted to sugar can be really difficult because it's so commonplace in our society. It's so socially accepted to use. It's so prevalent. If you think about alcohol as an example, it can be sometimes difficult for people to diagnose alcoholism because, you know, it's socially acceptable to drink alcohol as long as you do it in a way that's responsible. We have somewhat more social norms regarding alcohol consumption. I mean, people typically don't walk around during the day drinking alcohol unless they're on vacation. Like, you don't show up at your office with a few bottles of wine. And it's normally something that is consumed in social interactions and in restaurants and things like that. But sugar's different, right? I mean, you show up to work and if you bring in a tray of donuts, everybody's happy. If you, you know, bring food over to your friend's house, they're happy that you brought something. And so there's different social norms regarding sugar that makes it so much easier for people to passively consume it and consume it throughout the day and maybe be nurturing an addiction that isn't going to be always quite so obvious. So what I say to people when they think about whether or not they're struggling with an addiction to sugar is to really ask yourself, where is the harm? Am I harming myself or do I feel like I'm out of control? Now, those are really two parts of it. So the harm comes from if someone has developed diabetes, if someone has been told by their doctor they need to lose weight, that they're at risk for developing chronic health conditions as a result of their excess body fat. If somebody's developed cardiovascular disease and it's related to their diet, these are signs that maybe their diet is harming them and that sugar could be a big player in that. Also, the loss of control, I think, is really an important part of it. If you feel like you're out of control, that you don't have control over what you are eating, then that's usually an indicator that you might have an addiction. And so that's what really separates people who just casually enjoy sweets now and then and can say no from individuals who are addicted. People who are struggling with a sugar addiction really have a hard time saying no and limiting how much they're consuming.
How do our cells react to sugar? What are the harms that come, the metabolical processes that happen that contributes to things like, well, addiction as well, but obesity and health, adverse health effects?
Well, I think when it comes to sugar, one of the biggest things that we see in terms of how our body reacts is that when people consume excess amounts of sugar, it can cause alterations in the balance of their blood sugar and their insulin levels. And so there's going to be an excess amount of sugar circulating in the blood, which we don't want to happen. We want to have insulin pulling that sugar in our blood into cells so that it can be utilized as energy or stored for later energy or converted to energy in some other part of our body. Now, what ends up happening when people are constantly consuming excess amounts of sugar is that that process of insulin being able to pull the sugar into the cells breaks down. And so people can sometimes become insulin resistant, where the insulin is not going to be able to do its job and there's going to be excess amounts of sugar circulating in the body and not being able to be utilized. Now, another issue that we see in terms of the addiction piece is that when people are over consuming sugar, it can lead to alterations in the dopamine signaling in the brain. And so there can be a change in the expression of dopamine receptors. And what ends up happening is that when there are more receptors being expressed, and there's going to be a greater need for more dopamine. And so that's why when people are binging on sugar, they are releasing dopamine and it's attaching to dopamine receptors and propagating that reward message to different parts of the brain. And the more receptors there are, the more dopamine there needs to be in order for this process to work. And so this can really contribute to the addiction piece of things. And also metabolically, when we have all that excess sugar floating around in our blood system, that can lead not only to diabetes, but it can also contribute to heart disease, can also contribute to excess body fat storage, and it can also lead to many of the different health conditions that plague people in our modern society. Not to mention the mental health piece of it. That's something that we don't always talk about, but I feel like we're starting to recognize more and more. You know, there is a really strong link between diet and mental health. And people who find that they're overeating sugar, it's often the case that they're using sugar as a way to self-medicate. They're either their anxiety, their depression, stress. And so getting a handle on your sugar intake can really be a way to also reassess your mental health status and to better understand how you can cope with mental health issues that you might be struggling with.
Why is it though that sugar actually relieves anxiety momentarily? Like your research has shown that it does attach to or stimulate also the opioid receptors, for example, that are also stimulated with the cannabis use and things like that. What are the metabolic processes that leads into the momentarily relief of anxiety
So it,
by sugar?
yeah, it's very similar to the way in which drugs of abuse can momentarily relieve anxiety and kind of make us relax and feel good. Basically, what happens is that when we consume sugar, it binds to those endogenous opioid receptors that we have, and it can then cause us to feel good, it can cause pleasure, and that momentarily can make us feel less anxious. And so that's one of the reasons why it can be a very powerful way to mitigate anxiety and to manage stress. And that's why people find that they comfort eat, or if they're upset about something or stressed about something, they maybe eat things that are not exactly super healthy, but it makes them feel better. And it's a way to kind of damper down that stress and the anxiety that people might have. And I think that a lot of people don't always realize that they're doing that, right? That they're using food as a way to self-medicate until they start to keep a food diary or, you know, really pay very close attention to their food choices and why they're making them and what are the circumstances surrounding those choices. And it's often very clear that it's linked to helping to manage mental health and to manage somebody's mood.
Yeah, makes sense. So my question is, with all this information, especially with artificial sweeteners and all these added sugars and how big of an impact it does have, not only to our metabolic health and body, but also to our brain and dopamine, which is like known to be so important for our mental health, balance, motivation, and life in general. So sugar is by the FDA classified as generally safe. Do you think it is safe to consume sugar?
I think it's safe in moderation. I think the problem is that it's not consumed in moderation. It's not used in moderation. And I think that it's something that, you know, for some individuals who, for various different reasons, whether it's genetics or just, you know, their environment that they have, the resources that they have, they're able to create a food environment for themselves that can allow them to insulate themselves from the impact that all this added sugar can have. But most people cannot. And I think that that's where we find the struggles because it becomes unsafe for the majority of individuals because they're not able to control their food environment in a way that's going to allow them to consume sugar in a safe manner. And I think we see this happening, you know, among children, especially children who are living in low socioeconomic areas where there are fewer resources, there's less access to fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, there's less cooking that's being done in the home. I think that many cases, those individuals are falling victim to being at risk for developing a sugar addiction because of their immediate food environment and the impact that that can have. So I would say that, you know, sugar is not something that should be a banned substance. I don't think that it in and of itself is bad. I think that the amount of use is bad. And I think that most people just don't really understand or are not aware of how much added sugar is in our diet and how it's finding its way into virtually every single meal that we consume.
Yeah. According to CDC, an average adult eats about 17 tablespoons of sugar each day. What's the considered safe limit based on what you've researched and based on your like view on how sugar affects the brain and the body? What do you think is the safe level?
Well, my opinion is that, and this was actually recommended for inclusion in the latest iteration of the US dietary guidelines that came out a few years ago, that the recommended amount be 6 teaspoons a day. That recommendation was not adopted for various reasons, largely probably due to the pressures by the food industry to make it so that sugar isn't quite so demonized. Right now, it's recommended, depending on, you know, your age and your size, usually between like 8 to 10 teaspoons a day. Now, keep in mind that that's not, like you said, what people are consuming. The average American is consuming probably closer to 20 teaspoons per day. And if you look at individuals who are at risk, individuals struggling with comorbid health conditions, obesity, things like that, their intake is greater. And so we do see a correlation between sugar intake and obesity rates. We see a correlation between sugar intake and cardiovascular disease, sugar intake and many of these other health conditions that have largely been attributed to lifestyle. And what we're seeing is that sugar seems to be the common theme among them. And if we can reduce our reliance on added sugar, I think we can reduce a lot of unnecessary medical complications, unnecessary health conditions, and we can really improve the lives of many people. But it's just really not happening. And it's unfortunate because it is something that would be an easy fix if we could really, you know, get this information out there and get people to take it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, many people are now looking the ways to reverse aging and extend lifespan and health span. And many people are willing to take supplements like NMN and, you know, very little research supplements as well. But then reducing sugar is very hard for us, probably due to how our brain work and how is it added to every product in the market these days.
Yeah. I mean, I would say to anybody who's trying to slow down their aging, you know, before I pop any pill or jump in a cold pool or, you know, go in the sauna or whatever all these other suggestions have been, I would just drastically cut back on added sugar because that in and of itself is going to improve longevity. It's going to improve our livelihood and it's certainly going to have a positive impact on our appearance and it's going to help people, you know, to stay feeling young for a longer period of time for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So let's go into the solutions. How can we actually, first of all, reduce the intake of added sugar, but also I think how can we control sugar cravings? That's the second important part.
I think, you know, reducing the sugar comes down to, and I talk about this in my book that'll be coming out at the end of the year called Sugarless. You know, it comes down to knowing where the sugar is and being a savvy consumer, understanding, you know, the food labels and understanding how you can identify all the different names of sugar and not only just identifying sugar, but figuring out how to replace it. So if you have a particular product that you enjoy eating and you suddenly discover, oh my goodness, this has sugar in it. No wonder I like it so much. That doesn't mean you have to give it up forever, but it means that you have to try to find an alternative product that doesn't have added sugar. So even things like that you would never expect to contain sugar, like bacon, for example, many bacon, if you go to the grocery store and look, it's cured with sugar. It has sugar in it. And so you just need to switch brands and try to find a different variety. And I think really just identifying all the sources of sugar in your diet and figuring out how that you can replace them with something else that you enjoy. It's not about depriving yourself or not having things. It's about making other choices and choosing the healthier options. So developing that mindset is really important.
Yeah, I feel the responsibility is definitely put into the hands of a consumer these days. Like, unfortunately, we cannot really trust labels anymore. Even if it says natural, no added sugar doesn't mean that it doesn't have the sweet taste, which can be equally addictive. And natural doesn't mean anything these days.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, you bring up a good point. I think most of us assume that if you go in the grocery store, that everything in there is safe to eat. Right? We don't worry that the things are going to be poisoning us or killing us. And you assume that the food is safe, but that's not the case. The food is not all safe in the grocery store. You need to carefully curate what you put in your grocery cart to make sure that it is safe. And I think that involves sifting through the labels and understanding what products you're buying. And I think a lot of that, like you said, it comes down to being on the consumer. You cannot rely on the grocery store, the government. You cannot rely on these other agencies to do that for you. It's really going to be a personal choice.
Yeah. And I mean, the best food choice is the food without the label.
It's true. And again, you know, we've become a very busy society. A lot of us have become reliant on processed foods because of the convenience. A lot of families, you know, with little kids, they're juggling multiple careers. Maybe they're a single parent and there just isn't enough time, it seems, to do all the things that need to be done. And unfortunately, the first thing that gets sacrificed is cooking and preparing meals at home. And with that comes, again, our reliance on these processed foods, which contribute to the sugar addiction. And so I think helping to figure out strategies to be able to cook more often at home, get kids interested in preparing their own foods, making sure that, you know, we get access to fruits and vegetables on a regular basis, making sure that we're incorporating a variety of different types of foods into our diet. That's important. And I think that if we can move away from the reliance on processed foods and move back toward cooking for ourselves and preparing foods from scratch, it can really make a big difference. And yes, it's a time commitment. And yes, not everyone loves to cook, but I think everybody loves to be healthy, right? And loves to live. And so if that's going to be what needs to be done in order for us to come out of this situation and better the health of ourselves and our family, then it's a step that just we have to take.
Yeah, definitely becoming interested in food and cooking. That's a great point that already starting when people are young to make them very interested in cooking and what's in their food. That will like save our society to some degree.
It's true.
Because the ignorance is the way, and it's not ignorance by choice necessarily. It might be just like a habit.
Exactly. And you know, it's funny because when I was younger, I'm dating myself here, but when I was younger, I had to take home economic classes in school. And we literally took cooking classes. We learned how to bake a cake. We learned measuring cups, spoons, just, you know, how to turn on the oven. All the different cooking methods, sauteing, frying, this, that. And it was something that was taught to children in public schools. And now that's not done. And so if you want your children to learn how to cook, you better teach them yourself. And so it's really a skill that needs to be taught at home. And it's something that is somewhat of a lost art and a lost necessity for our well-being. If we have a generation of young people who don't know how to cook or don't appreciate cooking, we're going to be in big trouble, because it's just going to increase our reliance on the processed food. And that's something that we need to get away from. So if we really want to make a change, we have to get young kids interested in cooking and interested in creating their own foods and designing their own palate and designing this type of diet that they're going to enjoy, but it's not necessarily going to be something that's, you know, heated up in the microwave or coming, you know, in a processed package.
Yeah, definitely. So one question, if you would have to make a choice between having Coca-Cola or having the zero version of Coca-Cola, I know that, you know, the best thing would probably be take neither. But, you know, for the brain, for the addiction potential, is some of these better?
So I would say it's a difficult question to answer. The response I would give is that I would have the Coca-Cola with actual sugar in it. The reason is because what happens when we become overly reliant on consuming beverages that have these alternative sweeteners is that our brain is expecting it to contain calories, and it doesn't. And so our brain reacts in a way that over time, you know, it's going to essentially expect that when we taste something sweet, it's going to have calories. And when it doesn't, when you do that over and over again, your brain's going to react by telling your body that, oh no, if you taste something sweet, it doesn't contain calories. So we better, you know, store it as fat. We're not going to have calories immediately ready to burn as energy. And so it changes the physiology of our brain when we do that. And so our brain thinks sugar is sugar. It doesn't necessarily think, you know, stevia and monk fruit and all these other sweeteners are the same. And so that's why I would choose the sugar sweetened version. Now, I think if we're talking about individuals, you know, who are trying to wean themselves off of sugar, if they have an addiction and they're really trying to, then I would suggest, you know, consider swapping in some of these alternatives to help you. But like I said earlier, the goal has to be at the end of the day to just de-sweeten our diet, because that's really the big problem. We've become so dependent on having sweetness in our diet, and that's what's led to this addiction.
Yeah, definitely. And we are obviously not recommending anyone to drink Coca-Cola. You know, it's not healthy in any sense, but it's an interesting question, because I've heard many people to be contemplating on this, like, sometimes I really want that, you know, sweet drinks, which one should I use? And they are confused. So I want to get your perspective. Obviously, there are many layers, like we can talk about gut microbiome, right, or whatever it is. But I think that was a very good balanced answer. And it depends on your individuality. And if you have some issues with diabetes or blood sugar control, then it all plays into the picture. Are there some maybe supplements or something like that that can help control sugar cravings?
That's a good question. You know, there's been some speculation that, you know, certain things can help reduce craving. I'll be honest, I don't really find the literature all that convincing about any of the supplements in terms of reducing cravings. I think that if anything, maybe trying to find a way in which, you know, you can change your mindset around the way we approach food, to me, is a better strategy than, you know, recommending a supplement. I don't really feel that people are. So the point of a dietary supplement is to fill a nutrient gap. And I don't necessarily think people who have a sugar addiction have that addiction because of a nutrition gap. I think that they have it due to a nutrition excess. And so they're having too much of something, not that they don't have enough of something else. And so I don't really see supplements as beneficial. But what I have seen is very beneficial is people changing their mindset around what food is. And I don't think that processed food is actually food. It's not. You can't plant, you know, a granola bar tree. You can't, you know, grow these things at home. These are man-made products that are being pushed on us. And when you change your mindset around, you know, what are the foods that you eat versus the foods that you don't, then, and you start to look at those processed foods as not real food, it can really have an impact, and it can help you to make better choices. I'm not saying, you know, you can never have a granola bar again, but again, if you're really looking at your health and thinking, okay, what do I need to do to make sure I'm living to my potential and being my happiest and my healthiest and taking care of myself, then you're going to want to choose those foods that are going to do that and going to support your goals. And so that's kind of, you know, where I land on that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's an excellent point. So changing the relationship with food is the first step to start making the long lasting change. And I think, yeah, that's the only way to make a long lasting change.
Yep.
For sure. Yeah, thank you so much. This has been super insightful. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure all the listeners have as well. And I'd like to learn more. So can you guide us to find your education, your books, and where can we learn more about this fascinating topic?
Well, thank
you
again for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. If people want to learn more about me, they can go to my website. It's drnicoleavina.com. And also on social media, you can find me at Dr. Nicole Avina, Dr. Nicole Avina. If you're interested in learning more about the books that I've written on sugar, like I mentioned, I have a new book that'll be coming out in November of 2023 called Sugarless, and that'll be available wherever books are sold, on Amazon. You can also find it on my website. And then I also have written several other books related to sugar and nutrition, especially related to children and pregnancy. So if you're interested in learning more about those books, what to eat when you're pregnant, what to eat when you want to get pregnant, or what to feed your baby and toddler, you could find them on my website. They're also on Amazon and basically wherever books are sold.
Thank you so much, Dr. Avena. And I would also like to guide people to read some of your research papers, because I found those to be super interesting about sugar and food addiction. So those are also found online.
Yes, you can find on my website. We've linked out to all of our research papers that we're allowed to, but if you go on PubMed or Medline and just put my name in, those will all pop up. And that's great. I do think that it's so important for people to read the actual research studies. And we always try to write our papers in a layman-friendly manner so that, you know, if you're not a scientist, you're not going to necessarily be completely confused. And so always go to the original source and definitely check out those initial papers.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear what questions and ideas you got from today's episode, so leave a comment on YouTube and let me know about you. If you liked this episode, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. This also helps with podcast ranking and visibility. If you know someone who might benefit from listening to today's episode, consider sharing it with them and spreading health. Looking forward to having you around next time as well. Subscribe to get notified on the next episode. See you next time at the same place. Have a great rest of the week.